Welcome to LOA Today. Walt Thiessen and Life Coach David Barkey here. Today is Sunday, April the 1st, 2018, 8 p.m. Eastern Time. Your weekend daily dose of happy, and happy Easter to those who are celebrants of Easter. It's the it's an early Easter this year, not quite as early as it is some years, a little earlier, a little bit later than others, but, you know, for the most part, it's an early Easter, so happy Easter.
Happy Easter, everybody.
Why not, you know? And I understand you did something fun today.
I did. I went with some friends and family to a very nice Easter buffet and ate too much, but what can you do? I mean, it's a buffet.
Yeah, well, that's what they're for, right?
Yeah, because you're thinking, I paid a lot of money for this. I'm going to eat whatever I want.
Mm-hmm.
And,
oh, yeah.
It was nice, and it had a very nice view of a lake, so it was very pretty.
Oh, good.
And, it was nice. Nice to be with family and friends, and
all right.
Everyone's in a festive mood, which is nice. It was very nice.
So that's your win for the day, huh?
That's one of the wins, yeah. Very nice, and I had safe transportation today. I got a really good parking spot for the buffet. And actually, I had a good win at the buffet because apparently, like, you know, it was sold out, the tables. And they had originally sat us at a table not in the main room. The main room at this place is very pretty with the fireplace and the lake view. And they put us in this small room way, way far from the buffet.
Mm.
And I had asked the waiter, I said, oh, is there any chance we could get a table, because there were 10 of us, for 10 people, like, closer to the buffet, maybe in the main room, because this is, like, we're kind of hidden here, and it's so far from the buffet to carry the plates and whatever. She goes, oh, well, I don't know. Let me see if I can do anything. And she came back just a few minutes later, and she goes, follow me.
Oh, nice.
And they gave us a table right in the main room, right by the buffet. With
there you go.
Like, yay.
Hooray. That's nice.
Yeah. And it made a big, like, you wouldn't think it would, but it made a big difference to be in that main room with that kind of feel, the festive feeling with the fireplace and the view and all the people, than to be in, like, this back room with no view and maybe, like, just about four or five other tables. It was a whole different thing. So I was very, very glad that we got to go into that other room.
Very
good.
That was
another nice win for the day.
Yeah. So very pleasant
day. Yeah, what
about
you? What were some of your wins today?
Today was a nondescript day. I mean, there wasn't a whole lot going on. I mean, the biggest win of the day was we went for a drive, and it was lovely. Other than that, there wasn't a whole lot going on.
Yeah, no, that's the win. That is the win, though. And you got back and forth safely.
We did. We did. And we had a nice trip. It was just very pleasant out. So, yeah, it was good.
Yeah. That's a nice win. The weather was good. That's another win.
Yeah, that's true.
You woke up. We all woke up.
Yeah, that's always good. That's always a win.
Yeah. And I just thought, I always think it's interesting, like, you know, what's a little bit of history about law of attraction? Like, you know, when did people first start realizing it and thinking about it?
I did
a little bit of research, and I do want to thank lawofattractionguide.com for some of this. I thought I'd give them credit.
Okay.
And so some of the research I found was the history of the law of attraction can be traced through ancient times through the teaching of many Eastern teachers. Buddha spoke of this law when he told us that, quote, all that we are is the result of what we have thought, right? I mean, that's very law of attraction, obviously.
Sure.
And then Jesus also spoke of our power to create when he instructed us in the way to employ this law, quote, therefore I say unto you, what things soever ye desire when ye pray, believe that ye receive them, and ye shall have them.
Mm-hmm.
And then it goes on to say Mark 11:24. Also in the book of Matthew in the Bible offers us these words, quote, ask and it shall be given you. Seek and ye shall find. Knock and it shall be opened unto you. And all things whatsoever ye shall ask in prayer, believing, ye shall receive. So that's interesting because of the book we did already, Ask and It Is Given.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That, you know, that title, you know, was in the Bible. That's kind of, that's, you know, interesting. And let's see, there's another biblical quote. Quote, I think and speak positive. I focus on what is good. I refuse to fear or dwell on the negative. So that obviously is very, very law of attraction.
Mm-hmm.
And then he goes on to say, but when it comes to the history of the law of attraction and the first use of the actual phrase, we would have to look to a chapter entitled The Unknowable in Helen Blavatsky's book, Isis Unveiled, which was published in 1887. It was in the years after this first published mention of the words law of attraction that authors such as Charles Hennell and Ralph Waldo Treen coined the phrase as the creative principle written in historical documents. Many of these books that appear in the early history of the law of attraction can be found, yada, yada, yada. And then he goes on to explain the following authors seem to be some of the earliest to describe the creative principle as a law. And one which you probably heard of is Wallace D. Waddles.
Sure.
Yeah, Waddles studied and this is in 1860. He was born 1860 to 1911.
Yeah, Waddles is the Waddles one that he's the one that Rhonda Byrne's daughter gave her the book. That was the one that was the impetus for The Secret.
Yeah, Waddles apparently studied several books about the science of getting rich and all kinds of things, and a lot of these books are now even today used about the law of attraction. And there was also a Charles Hennell. Have you heard of Charles Hennell?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he was from 1866 to 1943. Charles Hennell put into books the ideas and methods he used to gain his success. Besides the Master Key System, which he wrote in 1912, he also wrote Mental Chemistry and The New Psychology. And by 1933, the Master Key System sold over 200,000 copies. And it's very law of attraction based. And he also had a weekly law of attraction exercise and lesson. So that's interesting that, you know, as far back as then.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I just find that's interesting. Like, where did law of attraction first start getting recognized? I mean, I don't know if you know anything else other than that, but from what
I don't know what the exact biblical citation is, but the whole concept of sowing and reaping is pure law of attraction.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It isn't usually presented that way in Christian circles, but it is. I mean, everything that you sow in your mind, in your discussion, everything is what you end up reaping in one way or another. That's very fundamental.
Yeah, and it's interesting to think, like, you know, as time goes on, you know, a long time from now, what people will look back, you know, what's going to come out next, or what, you know, what's going to be, like, the next big awareness that mm-hmm. we're going to be talking about.
Oh, yeah.
Hopefully it'll be when we're still here.
That'd be good. That'd be fun.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be at all surprised.
Even our radio show is helping, you know, anyone who catches it is helping people understand more about the law of attraction and how they can use it and think about it. And I think it's just amazing that there's still people carrying the torch now, and we're a part of that.
By the way, we hit a key number over the weekend. We are now at 35,000 plays.
Wow. Wonderful. Yeah. Well, congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, it's very cool stuff. So.
Yeah, word is spreading, and people are liking not only this show, but the other ones you're doing during the week. So fantastic.
Yeah, not only are people liking it, they're liking it in other records as well, because last month, the average visitor to the server, not just people who subscribe, but everybody, the total average, played 45 episodes.
Nice.
Yeah. I mean, that just shattered previous records. So it's good stuff. It's exciting what's happening.
Yes. And for anyone who doesn't know, we're in the middle of reading The Astonishing Power of Emotions, Let Feelings Be Your Guide, by Esther and Jerry Hicks, who talk about the teachings of Abraham. And Abraham is, from what I understand it, is a collective group somewhere where Esther channels information from, and she calls that group Abraham. And that's where she gets her wonderful law of attraction information from and all these books from.
Yep.
It's pretty amazing when you think about it.
Oh, yeah. Well, the whole subject is amazing. But particularly what how it's developed over the years has been really fascinating.
So should we continue on in the book?
Yeah, sounds good to me.
So right now we're at part two, which is titled Demonstrating the Astonishing Power of Emotions. And the first title is called Some Examples to Help You Let Go of the Oars. In the pages that follow, we will offer examples on a variety of subjects in which people often find themselves out of alignment with their own desires. We will discuss desires relating to your physical body, your relationships, your life purpose, your financial employment, and even world events.
By the way, David, let me just interrupt for a second. For those who are trying to keep up, tell everybody who has a copy of the book what page that we're on.
Oh, sure, yeah. If you have the book, The Astonishing Power of Emotions, this is from page 49.
All right, there we go.
If you want to follow along, that's where we are. We have gathered these examples from the vibration of mass consciousness as you have been living your lives, and in doing so, have been continually asking for improvement and expansion. Some of these examples will dovetail with things that are important to you right now, and some of them you may not relate to in any personal way, but it will be helpful for you to read them, even if they are not about your issue, because within these examples, you will find a complete understanding of the science of deliberate creation. It is likely that as you read these examples, you will take issue with some of them, for you may not believe that some of the desires are appropriate. Depending upon what you are currently experiencing and how you are feeling, you may find some of these examples to be frivolous. For example, if you are frightened about a physical condition and you are reading a section regarding how to improve your relationship with someone at work, you may feel annoyed that we are giving so much attention to something that seems insignificant to you given your circumstances. But even though you may not be able to personally relate to some of the examples that are offered here, we encourage you to read through them anyway. For it is our knowing that in the process of reading these examples, you will come to more profoundly understand vibrational alignment. We do not seek to guide your desires, for your own life has already accomplished that. It is our desire that the following examples serve as a tool that causes you to allow your own alignment with your own desires. So that was that part.
Pretty much the same thing that they've been telling us all along, but now we're starting to take a new twist on it with the new section. And the new section essentially is focusing on demonstration and showing how the stuff works. So, and that's good. We need to see how it works.
Yeah, and I like that they say that, you know, even if you're not going through or relate to what they're talking about, you're still going to get something out of the examples.
Correct. Yeah, exactly.
Because it makes you want to continue.
Right.
Otherwise, you'll
I would
like,
hope.
Why am I doing this? Reading that?
Yeah, exactly.
So example one is called, I have been given a frightening diagnosis. How long will it take me to find my solution? And here's the example. My body is showing some signs of imbalance. In fact, I'm far enough out of balance that I've received an unsettling diagnosis from an expert, and so now I feel fear. So that's the example, and here's their commentary on that. The fear that you feel is understandable under these circumstances, but still you are feeling it, and fear means that you are pointed upstream. Now, it is easy to lose sight of what your real work is here. For there are many varied opinions about the course of action that you should take. Hundreds of books have been written upon the very subject of this diagnosis that has been given to you. But we want to assist you in removing the confusion about what action you should choose and help you simply determine whether you are pointed upstream or downstream. It is easy to clutter the situation further by trying to understand what you should have done differently so as not to be in this situation. Looking back for a fork in the road where if you had only chosen differently, you could have arrived at a different place. I shouldn't have done such and such for all those years, or I should have done this instead if I had just taken better care of myself, if I had only taken the time for more regular checkups, if I had only listened to my mother. But we want you to understand that at this moment, the only thing you need to consider is, am I pointed upstream or downstream? And if you will let that be your only consideration right now, you can begin moving toward the improved state of health that you desire. In other words, there is nothing to consider other than, right now I am turned toward improvement or away from it, and the emotion you feel will give you the answer. The exercise of determining if you are pointed upstream, meaning away from the desired outcome you seek, or downstream, meaning toward the desired outcome you seek, will vary from person to person depending upon how fast your stream is flowing. For example, if your diagnosis is a serious, life-threatening one, and you still have a very strong zest for life, you would feel a very strong pulling against the current, or a very strong feeling of fear, when you focus upon the diagnosis. But if you are no longer very interested in living your life in this physical body, and the feeling of uneasiness would be much more slight. So the emotion that you are feeling in any moment tells you two things. One, how fast your stream is flowing, or how strong your desire is about a particular outcome, and two, which direction you are pointed in the stream. As we begin processing this example, we would like you to consider that even the idea of healing is pointed upstream, for it implies an overcoming of the illness. Feel the difference between the idea of beating the illness and that of allowing the wellness. I mean, I think that's really important.
It is. Yeah, it's vital.
When you have whatever it is you have, when you think of allowing the wellness, that just sounds so much easier.
Well, it's because it is easier.
It goes on.
There's a good reason for that.
but I could understand how, you know, most people would think of beating the illness.
Mm-hmm.
They have whatever it is they're told they have, and they want to beat the illness. But then when you hear allow the wellness, it's such a different feeling. Anyway, it goes on to say we will offer some statements that are usually offered in a situation like this. See if you can feel if the statement points upstream or downstream. And here's the examples. This is a very scary diagnosis. That would be upstream.
Oh, yeah.
I should have taken better care. What was that?
I said, oh, yeah, that's quite upstream.
Oh, yes. I should have taken better care of myself. That's also upstream.
Mm-hmm.
This disease is hereditary. That's also upstream. The options for treatment aren't pleasant. Again, upstream. How did I get here? Upstream. Why did this happen to me? Again, that's upstream. It is likely that as you read the preceding statements, you can easily feel that they are upstream resistant statements. But now consider the following common statements. I can beat this. I'm not going to let this get the better of me. I'm not ready to go yet. I will triumph over this. We want you to try to understand that those statements are also upstream resistant statements. Also, for in each of them, you are looking at the thing that you do not want and holding yourself in vibrational alignment with the unwanted rather than the wanted. And in statements such as all of the above, you are not remembering that in the unpleasant experience of contracting the disease, you have already made a vibrational request for improvement, which your inner being has already achieved. And your inner being is standing in that improved place, calling you toward it. And that is the momentum of the stream. Your very belief that you need to overcome this adversity has pointed you upstream and away from the solution. So that's kind of interesting. That
absolutely, yeah.
That you could think you're putting yourself in a downstream way, but you're really not.
Well, how often is it true so often that we put ourselves into a place of doubt with almost everything that goes on in our lives? So is it any wonder that we do it when we have a specific opportunity to do it? That's the pattern, right?
Yeah.
Isn't that what we normally do? You know, so it's really not a surprise at all. I don't think.
I know, but it's so interesting that when you read it and you're focusing on it, thinking about it, it's like, wow, that's so true. Like,
oh, yeah.
It's so easy to do that. It's so easy to do that.
It is indeed.
It goes on to say, yeah, go ahead.
No, I'm just confirming it is indeed.
Yeah. So now it goes on to say, now see how these thoughts feel. This diagnosis has caused me to ask for even more wellness. The larger part of me, my inner being, has already achieved that wellness. I will continue to evolve and ask for more. On a vibrational level, I am at my greatest state of wellness. The larger part of me, the inner being part of me, is better now than ever. The law of attraction is calling the rest of me toward that improved state also. The natural current is moving in the direction of my well-being. Any action I choose is less important than my knowledge of this stream. There is no reason for me to struggle in any of this. My well-being is inevitable. I like that one.
Yeah.
My well-being is inevitable.
I like that too.
Those were all downstream statements. Now, take some time here to feel the relief and the relaxed downstream nature of those statements. Whatever you feel relief, you have lessened your resistance, and when you lessen your resistance, you are flowing in the direction of your desire. The physical manifestation of your wellness will not be fully evident immediately, but that is not necessary. For now that you have discovered the art of allowing your well-being rather than the impulse to resist it, your well-being must return. As you continue to attempt to guide your thoughts downstream in time, that will become your natural inclination. It will come easy to you and your wellness will return. At first, your relief will be sporadic. In time, your relief will be constant, and then the manifestation will match the relief. Disease is the law of attraction's response to resistance. Well-being is a law of attraction's response to allowing. And that's a big thing to get.
It's really interesting. The one metaphor they keep returning to in this book, which is all about emotions and the astonishing power of emotions, that's the title of it, subtitled Let Your Feelings Be Your Guide, is all about the upstream, downstream. And that metaphor, it's a metaphor that they present to us in a logical sense, but what they're really suggesting is it's an emotional metaphor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's true, of course, the fact that anything that we're perceiving as difficult or upstream is an emotional perception, and anything that we perceive as being easy, it's downstream. It's an emotional perception, but it's a key point.
Mm-hmm.
Emotions mm-hmm. are the guide to whether something is easy or hard. It's not how much skill you have. It's not how much you know. It's not who your parents are. It's not how big your company is. It's not how big your family is. It's your emotions, and it's all your emotions.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And after reading that, it just makes me realize, wow, it could be so easy to fall into the upstream way. Because like you said earlier, that's kind of what most people are used to doing, at least initially.
Well, that's what our society teaches us, isn't it? It's what our cultures teach us. And when I say society, I should say societies, because we're global. We have listeners all around the world. And every society, of course, has its own differences and its own peculiarities and characteristics and so forth. But they all teach the same basic negative spin. It's just the way they do it is different. You know, what they emphasize mm-hmm. is different. I'm going to be scared of this instead of scared of that.
Yeah.
But the point is they're always focusing on the negative, and they teach the negative, right? We're all taught negative. Now, mm-hmm. it is important to note there are some people in some societies who don't get that teaching or who are taught by parents who are more enlightened, shall we say, and who understand, no, you've got to train your child to be more positive, to believe that the world is their oyster, so to speak, to believe that all things are going to come out good and so forth. And that's a great thing. There are parents that are like that. But I'm talking about the overall, the average, the typical. Typically, anywhere you go around this planet, what is taught is be afraid, be nervous, be concerned, be frightened, be depressed, all of the negative emotions in the full range of their glory.
Yes, and I would say, if there is anyone listening that has been diagnosed with something, look at those statements on page 53 of The Astonishing Power of Emotions, those downstream statements, and I would start adding those daily as affirmations, so you can get used to thinking and turning to those thoughts rather than the more fearful thoughts on the previous pages.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know that you're not telling people to get off medication or to do, you know, not do what their therapists are teaching them and so forth. You're saying in addition to what they're doing.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Absolutely. So what would you, in your words, say well-being is the law of attraction's response to allowing? Like, how would you describe, go further with that one?
I'm not sure what you mean. I'm sorry, I'm drawing a blank. I don't follow where you're trying to go to.
Well, someone who's listening that's saying, well, that hears that well-being is a law of attraction's response to allowing. Like, how would you, and they say, well, what does that mean? How would you explain that?
Well-being is law of attraction's
response to allowing.
Whereas
they're saying disease is the response to resistance, well-being is the response to allowing.
I would say what, I mean, other than on the face of it, clearly allowing and well-being are going to go hand in hand where LOA theory is concerned. I guess what I would say if I was trying to take it to the next step is that well-being is how you get yourself to the point where you allow. And allowing is also how you get to this point where you're in well-being. So in that sense, they're hand in hand. I think you really have to look at where you are personally in your life at this moment in time, not so much, you know, over the years, but in this particular moment, this particular instant.
Yeah.
Where are you at in terms of allowing? Well, it's pretty easy to answer that question. If you're getting everything that you've been asking for, then your allowing is great. It's wonderful. And if you're not getting anything that you're asking for, then your allowing needs a little work. And if you look at what your sense of well-being is at the time that you're asking this question, if you feel a great sense of well-being, chances are you're also in the allowing mode. If your well-being could be a little bit better, probably a little bit of resistance going on there, so a little bit less allowing.
Yeah, and I think the word you use, which goes with the book, is how are you feeling?
Yeah.
Are you feeling connected to the stream of well-being and feeling good and happy? Then you're in a allowing place.
Exactly. That's what makes it the astonishing power of emotions. Ah.
Yes.
David.
And it is astonishing.
We are obviously in a silly mood tonight. That's all there is to it.
But that's good.
It is a good thing.
Silly mood.
By the way, we haven't mentioned, but since we are now doing this on Sunday nights, if you're listening live here on Sunday night and you want to jump in and share your perspective, we love that. You know, if you're listening live, you're probably right now on the homepage of loatoday.net because that's where you find the player that plays the live broadcast. And on that same page, you'll also see where you can click on the Zoom logo. And if you have not already downloaded the software, that'll help you do that instantly. And then you can just connect right in and, you know, we'll be glad to talk to you and find out what your perspective is. We've had some very interesting perspectives presented by listeners, particularly on the nighttime shows, both here Sunday night and on Tuesday night. And in fact, a couple weeks ago, David, we had Janet who came on, who not only shared her perspective, she shared the super win of all time, right? Because she came on, what was it, November last year, something like that? And she was looking for some support. They were trying to get a new house in Northern California, and she just wanted some you know, emotional support and vibrational support and so forth. So we're going through things with her. And then she comes back a couple weeks ago to report that they got the house they wanted perfectly. I mean, exactly. Every item on her checklist and more that she didn't even expect. You know, so if you got a win like that to share, we'd love that too. But even if you just want to come on to, you know, just ask a question or say, you know, you were talking about this and it made me think about that or, you know, whatever. It doesn't have to be a super win like, you know, getting the house of your dreams. It would be lovely, but you know, it doesn't. We don't require that. We just want to find out what you have to say. I mean, a couple of people who've been on twice, BJ and Lucy, both came on twice, and both of them had some really fascinating insights that they've been able to share. In fact, I don't know if you heard, Dave. Lucy came on last week and told us she had used LOA to attract a new part-time job that she wanted. She needed she's going into school full-time. She's been going to school part-time, and she needed to go full-time, right, yeah. But because of the nature of her grants and so forth, she still had to have a part-time job. And she had a full-time job, but that wasn't going to work. So she needed to quit that and get a part-time job. Not only did she get the part-time job, but the location is right across the street from where she lives. How's that?
Wow, fantastic.
Yeah. So there's another kind of win. It's been great. It's been great listening to listeners and BJ. Oh, BJ's come out with some amazing insights, some really interesting insights that, you know, Tom and I were kind of like saying, wow, that's really something. That's kind of a little bit out there, but it's interesting. So,
wonderful.
So I say that just to encourage you. If you've been wanting to connect, we'd love to hear from you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So the book goes on. How long will it take me to find my solution?
Years and years and years. No, I'm kidding.
Forever. Forget about it. Okay, so question, quote, how long will it be before I will begin to see improvement in my physical body? In other words, when can I expect a new and improved diagnosis?
Mm-hmm.
So that's the question, and here's the response. While it is understandable that you might still be asking these questions, as you are longing for a quick resolution to your frightening diagnosis, the questions themselves arise from the premise of experiencing sickness and needing a solution. And so, your questions definitely are pointed upstream. They also reveal your lack of understanding about the power of the stream, its direction, and its ability to take you to the solutions you are seeking. When you ask, how long before I will see improvement? You are actually asking, how long will I be here in this place I do not want to be? The variation in those words may seem slight to you, but we assure you that the vibrational difference is huge. And that's the vibrational difference is, I'm just saying, you know, I'm not reading anymore, but I'm just saying that's the part that, that's the part that is law of attraction related, and that's why it's so important on how you think about things, because everything, the way you think about something affects your vibration.
Yes, that's true. The other thing that occurs to me, and this ties into something that Wendy and I had kind of batted around this past week, it's important to remember that when Abraham is talking about the way we word questions, they aren't actually talking about the words. It's not the words themselves that are the concern. It's the emotions behind the words.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, they phrase it in a way that it kind of makes it sound like they're saying it's the words. They're really not saying that at all. This whole book is about emotions, the astonishing power of emotions. So when they talk about how, when you phrase it one way, you're leading to one kind of solution or one kind of result anyway. And when you rephrase it another way, you're leading toward a different kind of result because it's a different vibration. They're talking about the emotional stuff backing those things that you're saying, not the words themselves. So I just want to make sure everybody, you know, stays cognizant of that, because it can sound like it's the words. I mean, it almost sounds sometimes like we're talking about magic words, right? Like a magician would do, right? You know, okay, wave the magic wand, say abracadabra, you know. No, it's not the words. It's the emotions behind the words.
Yeah. And actually, it goes on to kind of talk about that. The only way you'll be able to personally know if your words or focus are upstream or downstream is by reaching for a visceral feeling of relief. There's that word feeling again.
Mm-hmm.
Feeling of relief.
Yep.
For example, how long before I will see improvement in my body is upstream. Now try to find a question or perspective that feels better to you than that. Focus on the way you feel and try to make yourself feel better with your next statement.
In other words, the words have to match the feeling.
Yes. So they're saying a more downstream way would be to think improvement is natural, all in good time.
Mm-hmm.
Those are two downstream statements that you can think instead of the other. Then it goes on. Now, these may not seem to you like earth-shattering statements, and you may not really completely believe them, but none of that matters. The only thing that matters is that by focusing a little bit, you have made yourself feel a little bit better. You did not put a motor on your boat and race instantly to some miraculous healing, but you did stop the resistance. You did release the oars. You did turn in the stream. You did everything that was necessary right here, right now. Occasionally, something will happen. You will observe something. Someone will say something to you, or you will remember something that causes you to point upstream again. However, this is not a problem for you because you are now aware of your position in the stream. So, once again, with a little bit of effort, you can release the upstream thought by replacing it with something that feels better. For example, you see someone who is obviously suffering from a debilitating disease, and you notice that the person's symptoms seem similar to your own. However, that individual is clearly much sicker than you are. As you see him or her, you feel fear and you think, I hope that's not where I am headed. But this time, the thought does not have priority within you. Instead, your awareness of the way you feel takes priority. And since the way you feel right here, right now, matters to you even more than whatever thought you are contemplating, you make a decision at this moment to improve your feeling. So they go on. Upstream would be, I hope that that's not where I'm headed. And something more downstream would be, I don't know what that person's story is. That person may be better today than a month ago. I don't know what thoughts are creating that person's experience. Those are all downstream. That person's experience and my experience are unrelated. I shouldn't go looking for trouble. I think I'll mind my own business. So those were examples of our more downstream thoughts. Again, you are not looking for drastic improvement or life-changing ideas, just soft, slight improvement in the way you feel. As many situations occur during each day, and as you are aware of the way you feel while you are in them, and as you insist on getting yourself pointed slightly downstream over and over, before you know it, downstream will be your natural tendency. And soon there will be obvious evidence in your physical body of the improvement in the direction of your thoughts. By focusing upon the improved emotion, which you can achieve in this moment, you lay the vibrational foundation for your physical improvement. When you try to pin down the specifics of when or how the physical improvement will come, you forestall your physical improvement because you do not know those answers. And so you cause resistance in your vibration. In short, although you cannot achieve an immediate physical recovery, you can achieve an improved emotion, and that is enough.
This is a very good example, because we're talking about somebody who has a health problem, probably some sort of dread disease, quite possibly something where they've even been given a lifespan prognosis, and it's not a terribly long one. But it can also be for somebody who's just got a chronic condition too. A chronic condition that doesn't go away is not a just situation. It's a tough situation. The point being, anytime that you have any kind of health issue, there's usually some sort of pain and discomfort involved. There's usually some fear involved. There's usually a lot of negative things that are clamoring for the attention of the person who's afflicted. So talking about making small shifts in how you feel and how you feel about how you talk about and so forth can seem pointless.
Yes.
You know what I mean? It can seem like, why am I wasting my time on anything like that? So how would you answer that? Because that's a real problem. I mean, when you're in pain, is difficult. Taking your mind off of a painful situation is really hard to do.
I know from my experience as a certified law of attraction life coach, I have worked with people who have been in pain, and they've gone to doctors, and the doctors have not found anything wrong. Like you said earlier, like, we're not trying to discourage anyone from seeking medical help. So they were like describing, like, one example, someone had neck pain, and every time that happened, he would just go into thoughts of like, oh my God, my neck hurts. There goes my whole day. Nothing's going to go right. But like all these negative thoughts. So, you know, we worked on, well, what kind of thoughts can you come up with that when your neck hurts are going to be more helpful to you? In other words, I was guiding him to come up with more downstream thoughts, just like they were talking about in the book.
Mm-hmm.
And he did. And he came up with, you know, a good arsenal, at least 10 to 20 very helpful, real downstream thoughts. And he started going to those thoughts instead of what he was used to doing. And it really was only maybe 2 or 3 weeks after that. And he was like, David, I can't even tell you, my neck pain has diminished so much.
Mm-hmm.
Just
sure.
By going into these downstream thoughts instead of the upstream thoughts. And then as time went on, he was just reporting going through long phases where his neck didn't, long periods of time, where his neck didn't even bother him anymore. So I think that's pretty amazing. I mean, and that's what some of what we were just reading, that they were talking about, how the improved thoughts can eventually, you do start feeling better. And that's what he was experiencing. And that's a great example to share for this particular topic we're talking about.
Yeah, it's impressive that he made that kind of improvement. Of course, he was dealing with something that was not diagnosable by the medical community. They couldn't find anything specific wrong with him.
In his mind, that even made it more upstream, because he was like, oh my God. And, you know, that's just one example from people I've worked with, but how you think about an illness and deal with it definitely affects the outcome, for sure, at least from my experience working with people.
Let me give you a different scenario. I've been working on the editing of the book, which, by the way, I've completed all the editing. The only thing that's left are the articles that I'm contributing. You know, and I have about half of those done, so I'm doing my articles. But one of our co-authors is a woman who has debilitating arthritis, and her story is includes a rather extended tale of how she managed, despite having no means, to go to a specialist in Europe and was able to see the specialist for free, and it was quite an experience for her. But the point that I want to bring up is her arthritis is so debilitating that she's confined to a wheelchair, and even after she saw the specialist, she learned that the damage that has been done to her joints by the arthritis is so severe that there's no known operation that will repair it. And arthritis is an extremely, extremely painful chronic condition. So I have to ask my same question again. How about for somebody like that who's in a really, really difficult life situation where nothing that anyone can tell this person in, you know, the quote, real world, unquote, gives her any sense of hope that she can in some way leave that chronic debilitating pain behind, because it's inoperable. It's beyond any repair that is known to man.
Well, I would suggest the same thing to someone like that, as I did with my, you know, my client, which is I would, you know, help her come up with a list of downstream thoughts that would help her instead of continually reinforcing the pain and how hard and, you know, all that kind of thing.
So you're suggesting then that it's possible to overcome the physical pain just with her thoughts.
And I think the word is possible is accurate. Yes, I do. Based on how I've worked with people, it would definitely help her for sure. More than not. At a minimum. Like, she would be able to get through her day in a better way.
It certainly is interesting how powerful the human mind is. And I've noticed it most often. Well, I'm learning more and more with study of law of attraction and doing the podcast with you, Tom, and Cindy, and Wendy, and Joel. But through you guys, I've been learning the positive side. But I'm also very impressed with how powerful the mind is when I look at the negative side. And by the negative side, I mean situations where people are in a bad place, and inadvertently, through the power of their mind, they make their place worse.
Yes.
And it's just astonishing to me. I mean, Joel has a story that he told that I occasionally relate. It's a story of when he was in the depths of his gambling addiction. He's a recovered, or recovering, I guess the official term is, gambling addict. He hasn't placed a bet in 23 years. I would say that he probably could be counted as recovered, but apparently the recovery movement doesn't look at it that way. So anyway, he's a recovering gambling addict who's been recovered for a long time. But when he was in the depths of his addiction, and you know, right in the most ravaging part of it, he was on a horrible losing streak. He owed money all over the place. He had stolen money. He was expecting the cops to arrest him practically at any moment. I mean, he was just in a terrible place. Not so recently, he was facing, you know, eating out of a dumpster, just really bad. But, of course, he was still gambling, and he had gotten hold of some money and gone to a dog track. And he decided to place a bet on this one dog in this one race, and miracle of miracles, the dog won the race at tremendously long odds. And then he looked at the ticket he bought, and he had inadvertently bought a ticket on the wrong dog.
No.
And my point in relaying that story is, there's a great example of how the human mind actually worked against the human. He was trying so hard to use gambling as a way to get himself to a better place, he actually called the right race, but his mind made him buy the wrong ticket.
Wow.
I mean, if there's a better example of how powerful the human mind is, I don't know what it is. Because, for a gambling addict, if you have enough money to blow, you know, eventually, somewhere along the line, you're probably going to win something just out of sheer odds. And the one time that he won something, he still lost. So he had a perfect losing streak. Perfect 100% losing streak. That's hard to do.
Wow.
You know? That's how I know how powerful the human mind is. The fact that human beings are capable in their worst places of sustaining losses, disappointment, frustrations to new levels, to incredibly high levels or low levels, depending on how you want to measure it. but we're capable of doing that. So to me, that's more impressive than what humans are able to do on the positive side, because almost everybody can identify with, you know, that negative side stuff. We've all had that happen. Yeah. And that, to me, is the best way we can prove to ourselves this stuff really does work. Because I just worked it badly in the other direction. Well, imagine what happens if I run it in the good direction.
Yeah, I mean, from my own personal experience, many years ago, I would get vertigo at night. I'd just be sleeping. I'd wake up and everything would be spinning. I'd be holding onto the bed. And I would just go in, and that would cause me to go into like anxiety and panic, because I'd be like, oh my God, what's going on? And that just fueled more anxiety, and it was not good. And after I learned all this, whenever that happened, I started going into thoughts like, okay, I'm okay, everything's okay. Because I was checked by I had like an MRI and all that kind of thing, and nothing was found, and they were just like, oh, it's a condition called like non-benign vertigo or something, and it just kind of happens randomly. But when it did happen, after I knew about law of attraction, I would go into thoughts like, I'm okay. This is okay. This is only temporary. I'm going to take some deep breaths. Everything's going to be okay. And I have to tell you, it made such a huge difference. And as time went on, first of all, it rarely happens anymore. And if it does, I go into those soothing thoughts. And, you know, I would say within a few minutes, I feel fine and I go back to sleep. And that's it. It doesn't have that same effect that it used to.
Mm-hmm.
And that's strictly by where I go with my thoughts when it happens.
Sure.
So interesting.
Oh, yeah. I've never had anything like a diagnosis like that. But I've certainly had vertigo type experiences. I had a couple this winter, actually. And there was all the flu going around and all that kind of stuff. I'd heard about that, but we hadn't gotten sick. And then there was one night I got up to go to the bathroom, and as I'm coming back, whoa, all of a sudden everything's spinning. I practically fell on the bed.
Oh, God. I know that horrible thing.
And I did very much the same thing. Yeah. I did the same thing you did. I just waited for the room to stop spinning. That always helps.
Yeah.
And then once the room stopped spinning, or at least slowed down enough that I could actually, you know, regain my composure, so to speak, then actually I just reached over to, I always keep my smartphone next to the desktop, not to the desktop, next to the bed on the bedside table, with the sound turned off. And so I reached over there and turned on at a very low volume one of the Abraham positive affirmation rampages that I like to listen to. And just played that next to my ear for like the next 9 minutes, just to calm down, get myself focused on something else entirely, and went to sleep. I don't think I even made it through the whole thing. I think I fell asleep in the middle of it. And when I woke up, I was fine. Yeah, and I did that twice. Yeah. That happened on two separate occasions this past winter. So I can attest to the fact that, vertigo, any kind of situation like that, this kind of shifting of the mind, refocusing, really does work.
Yeah, you know, anyone who's listening, if you have any kind of condition or like that, it's just so important to know. Now that you know what we're talking about, you know, try telling yourself something more soothing, something that's going to help you calm down rather than just going into the panic and the anxiety of it all, because it makes such a huge difference.
It makes a very, very difference. Something else that I told you about when I first started working on it, but I'm still doing that mirror work that we talked about.
Tell me your update on that. Yes,
I'm actually on day 44, and
fantastic.
44 days ago I started doing this mirror work, and for people who have never done mirror work is essentially where you look in the mirror once a day, and you look into your own eyes, and you're basically talking to yourself. You're talking to the depths of your own soul. And you are doing everything you can to say things that show love, appreciation, joy, happiness in yourself, approval in yourself. You're trying to give yourself all those kudos that you wish others would give you, but you're giving it to you. And I've told the story a number of times here on the show. The first day I did it for 5 seconds. I couldn't handle any more than that. Second day was 10 seconds, but I kept at it. And the reason I stuck with it is I had heard from Cindy that Jack Canfield, who is, of course, the primary author of the Chicken Soup for the Soul series of books and is also a presenter on the movie and in the book The Secret, had reported that he did mirror work, and after either 30 or 40 days, Cindy isn't sure which, his negative self-talk had disappeared. Well, I've been plagued by negative self-talk for decades. And for those who aren't quite sure what that is, negative self-talk is that little voice, that niggly voice that always pops up in any situation and tells you why something's going to go wrong, or why something is bad, or why something is terrible, or why something should be the subject of your disapproval, or, you know, anything that could possibly come into your mind that has a negative spin to it. That's the negative self-talk. And it drove me nuts. Negative self-talk has been driving me nuts for decades. It was one of the things that I tried to learn how to get rid of first, when I first learned how the law of attraction worked, and was completely frustrated because I had so many thoughts that go on during the day. We all do. I said, how can I possibly monitor them? How can I defeat them all? Well, it had been a long, slow slog trying to overcome it, trying to do the mental pivots and all that kind of stuff. And I'd made some progress, but I also knew that dratted voice was still there, showing up whenever I was most vulnerable to it, right? And it was just constantly feeding all this trash into my head. So when I heard that Jack Canfield got rid of it entirely, I said, I don't like talking to the mirror, but by God, if talking to the mirror is what it takes to get rid of that, I'm willing to give it a shot.
If that'll do it, I'll do it.
If that'll do it, I'll do it. And so I tried, and didn't really, other than my own discomfort in telling myself I love you, that was really tough at first.
Yeah.
Nothing really happened for the first 10 or 12 days. Around day 15, I could kind of sense something was changing. I wasn't really sure one way or another, but I could feel like there was something going on. By around day 20, I was noticing that the volume of the negative self-talk had diminished dramatically. Like between days 20 and 25, it was down to like 20% of its former volume, so it was really low by comparison. And then somewhere around day 30, it finally disappeared entirely.
It did. Wow.
It did. Now, it did have a relapse. I had a relapse around day 33, 34, something like that. But I stuck with it. I just kept doing the mirror work every day. And once again, it started to disappear. And right now, today I had a little tiny bit of negative self-talk going on, but I was able to get rid of it pretty quickly. The only thing that I did not totally get rid of, there was a fairly sizable period of time where my mood was just not very good. But there was no self-talk going with it. The self-talk had actually shut up. So I counted that to be an improvement anyway, no matter how you look at it. It made it a lot easier to do some of the pivots to get myself into a better frame of mind, which I was able to do. But there is an example of how the power of the mind can make a small change, and that small change is actually going to have big consequences. And by consequences, I mean good consequences for me. Because with that negative self-talk gone, all of a sudden, the thing that was my biggest enemy, me, has shut up. If you get what I mean.
Yes.
So now
it may be the kind of thing where you may have to do some, like, quote, tuning up. Like, you may feel like it's not there, like you said, then you kind of notice it again. So mm-hmm. Then you'll go back to the mirror work for a day or two. Maybe that'll stop it.
Well, actually, I'm not going to stop doing the mirror work. My intention is to do it for the rest of the year.
Fantastic. It's only going to be good for you.
Exactly. Yeah. Because I've already seen positive results. I got the result that Jack suggested that I would get. And so that's great.
Yes.
This is a result that I couldn't get any other way. All the other things I tried to do, you know, focusing on positives, you know, mental pivots and so on and so forth, none of them had gotten rid of the self-talk. This one got rid of the self-talk. Mm-hmm. So, well, mm-hmm. if it can do this, I wonder what else it can do. I wonder what other positive examples it can get.
It's also a great example of someone doing the work. You know, you're participating in your own healing and your own evolvement.
Yeah.
You know, it takes work. It takes work. Because a lot of times you hear different people say, you got to do the work. You got to do the work. And that's an example of, you're doing the work to help improve yourself, which is wonderful.
And I can be very honest and say I was one of those who didn't always do the work. I certainly never did well with affirmations. Yeah. I mean, a lot of people love affirmations. They love vision boards and so forth. And I tried them a few times, but I could never do the follow-through on them because the motivation just wasn't right. I just couldn't get myself jazzed enough to do it. In this case, the idea of getting rid of one particular thing that had plagued me, that gave me the motivation. And I've gotten to the point now where it's become almost habitual. They say 20 days to be habitual.
And you were ready for it.
Oh, I was really ready for it. There's no doubt about that. Yes. I was ready and then some.
That's right. But it's just kind of interesting to be like, you were ready for that information to do that, and it came. You acted.
Oh, yeah.
You're doing the work. And you're getting great results.
Yeah. So it's one of those things, once you get it going, it's actually not too hard to keep it going. It's the getting going that's the hard part. And establishing the habit over a period of weeks. But I've got it going over a period of weeks. I've got it going for like a month and a half. So, get going that long, you can keep it going. It's a lot easier now. Not like that first day. The first day, I looked at my eyes in the mirror, and I started, because I knew I was supposed to say, I love you. So I looked at my eyes, and I said, I love you. And I said, oh, God, I can't do this. And I just turned away. I couldn't. That's how short it was. It was not a long session. But on the other hand, because I was motivated, I was able to keep going, and that made a huge difference. I'm really glad I did, too.
I was very proud of you for doing that. Now you've got a good momentum with it, which
that's
is wonderful.
Right. I do.
It's kind of like when you go on a diet. Like the beginning, it seems hard, and then as time goes on, it's easier. And it's like similar.
I don't have a big weight problem. I could probably stand to lose a couple of pounds, but I don't have a big weight problem. But I want to say, for the benefit of all those who have been on diets, going on a diet is probably the craziest term we've ever invented, because everything we eat is a form of diet. You know, so going on a diet, it implies that you weren't on a diet before. Of course you are on a diet. It's just a different diet. I mean, there are all kinds of diets, you know? Oh, well.
That's a whole other discussion.
It is. And unfortunately, we're out of time.
Which I like talking about, but we'll have to do it next week.
We'll have to do it next time. We're out of time. But David, it's been great, and let's look forward to doing it a week from now.
Yes, and if anybody wants some law of attraction coaching, they could go to lifecoachdavid.com, or you can just email me at david@lifecoachdavid.com, and we'll take it from there.
Beautiful. And we'll see you all next time here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody.
Have a great one. Bye.